Welcome to Creative Disturbance.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Ivor D.O.C.
Ivor, as part of a Trust Me, I'm an Artist project, you exhibited this November 2015 in Prague the work Molding the Signifier at the Expost Cultural Center, and it was curated by André Sacco for the Art and Technology Center here in Prague, Sciences. Could you first describe this artwork, which is a rather complex one?
The molding is an art science piece at the intersection of several areas, ranging from informatics and artificial intelligence design through bioart, all the way to the study of mental illnesses. Now I'm going to describe the actual workings or inner workings and the setup. The central part is a projection with three artificial intelligence virtual beings. They live in a simulated virtual world, but are looking out with the help of a camera which runs face tracking software that recognizes faces of visitors to the gallery, and the artificial heads are able to pinpoint the exact location of the visitor in the gallery, and they are looking out from the virtual confinement out to the gallery space and observing and surveilling their own audience. Second part of the installation is a small site where a biological culture is being grown, and its spread is measured with a set of sensors and an optical digital microscope, also running optical recognition. And the data from this biological site are used to influence the inner workings of the artificial intelligences. The concept idea is to infiltrate artificial life and artificial consciousness with a biological infection. So there is a petri dish in the biocyte that grows a mold species. And as the mold grows, the artificial intelligences, their inner processes are disrupted. At the beginning of installation, which is usually planned for a week, these heads are trying as hard as they can to resemble human beings as we know them. But slowly and gradually, the processes that govern the facial tracking and also their speech are remixed and disrupted. So while at the beginning of the show, the heads are reading text from a seminal book on linguistics from Ferdinand de Saussure on the breakthrough discovery on the signifier and the significant. But this comprehensible speech is gradually replaced by glossolalia, which is a term from psychology that refers to language which has been mangled to the point of being unintelligible. It's a phenomenon which occurs with brain damage or in some kind of mental illnesses or even in some kind of religious practices.
Como como si es frenifica elegi libri du licho menti choisis en with recambi spect.
Could you tell us what was your intention and your goals in this piece?
What I intended with the piece was to show several issues or aspects which diverge from what people are accustomed to believe. First of all, we tend to perceive as our bodies or ourselves, our existence in the universe, as being separate from everything else. Like we are these unique singularities, and here is us and there is everything else. While in fact, the body is covered with membranes of all kinds, which are permeable and temporary, from the physiological to the psychological. And these membranes serve as points of entry for myriads of foreign agents of all kinds that invade the body and colonize it and even reprogram it for its own purposes, for its own survival, or just to find the host that they can exploit. And this ranges from agents that are biological, that we know as viruses, to the psychological that we know as memes. And I really wanted to visualize this process of invasion and of the resulting states that such an invasion can bring about. And I wanted to create a hybrid entity that would be part biological and part virtual, simulated. And I wanted to show the process of foreign agent infiltration specifically on this hybrid bio-cybernetic entity.
Trust me, I'm an artist, is dealing with ethical questions and the ethics in art. And I think we have at least two different kinds of artworks, some that are presenting by themselves an ethical issue of questions, and others that are more about ethical issues. And it seems to me that molding the signifier is more about the second kind. And you said in the ethical panel discussions that your first intention was not ethics per se. So how do you consider the ethical issues there?
I wasn't thinking of ethical issues when creating the piece. It just came to a realization when I started presenting it that it does raise a whole slew of questions, ranging from, on the one side of the spectrum, since I am using artificial beings which resemble humans to a high degree, and the audience can perceive that the process that happens to them is some kind of torture. I'm harming these artificial beings. So here's the ethical question, that at what point should we consider our virtual creations? When is the point where we have to start treating them as our equals? Are we allowed to harm them for any purposes? What would be the purpose that would justify such harm? Do they have the same status as living beings, or do they not? Of course, an important distinction is whether these beings are sentient or can be sentient. Of course, the running argument in the AI research community is that we are still very far from sentience, but some speculate that sentient artificial beings can appear without much effort on our side, and we will just notice that they are here when that happens. What the piece shows, in fact, and I repeat, this wasn't my original intention, but what it comes to show is that by the time that we notice that our artificially created counterparts are sentient, we might very well realize that we have been also harming them for some time.
Car si l'on veut démontrer que la loi de mise dans une collectivité est une chose que l'on subit et non une règle librement consentie, c'est bien la langue qu'en offre la preuve la plus éclatante.
But to me, there is a difference between consciousness and pain for, in the ethical questions and issue. That is, we do not recognize or we do not acknowledge consciousness to animals and creatures that we use in labs, in the scientific research, but we say that as long as they are able to encounter pain, we should not harm them or their integrity. So the difference between being able to feel pain and being conscious, there is a difference here. So can we be conscious without feeling pain? And can we feel pain without being conscious?
That is definitely... Now, this second question, I believe it's definitely possible. We can postulate the existence of a being that is conscious without feeling pain, because we know humans who have a rare condition that they don't feel pain because they have a certain kind of disease of the nervous system which prevents them from feeling pain. These people do exist, so therefore beings who are conscious and don't feel pain do exist. Are we allowed to harm someone who doesn't feel pain? Well, certainly. Well, let's imagine that we are doing the experiment on this human who has this condition. We are doing the scientific research that we so readily justify on lab mice. I think practically everybody would revolt against the idea of using a human being who doesn't feel pain for lab experiments just because he doesn't or she doesn't feel pain.
Just me. I'm an artist.
And yourself, you said you were very influenced by the Uncanny Valley. So is this work really about speculation about a potential future? Or is it at the same time also reflecting about what's going on today and our way of considering life in general in our societies today?
I'm dealing both with the current situation, the proliferation of virtual agents, the products as they are being productized and marketed by companies like Microsoft, who has their Cortana and Apple's Siri. And at the same time, it's a speculation on the future, like what impact this proliferation will have on future society. The Uncanny Valley is a phenomenon which fascinates me to no end. I like to work with it very much. Up to the point, since I've been told recently that there has been a more comprehensive research on the Uncanny Valley, which says that people actually get used to beings which are on the wrong side of the valley, that after some time there is an adjustment. I must have felt this intuitively, because it's exactly what I do, is that I make the work to develop over time, and during this development the effect on the viewer crosses back and forth to the Uncanny Valley and back. This was done on purpose. I guess I like to work with unsettling people's unconscious acceptance of a virtually simulated human being.
Mm-hmm. You are talking about virtual humans and the uncanny valley and how we human and the viewer relates to that. But you also said that you were interested on this fact that the human being is part of a kind of ecological system interacting with bacteria, viruses, and so on and so forth. And that one of your interests was how it can, when it goes wrong, affect the brain in a way that people are not able to perform normally. So for me, this goes beyond the emergence of artificial creatures, but is very much into the description of ourselves and reflecting back on what a human being currently is. So could you elaborate on that and on your interest in the brain bacterial relationship?
Indeed, the work is not only showing some artificial intelligence creatures, but it's a reflection on us humans and humanity itself, because the inner workings of artificially created brain are governed by a very similar set of rules as a living neuronal tissue which is in our brains. And I also wanted to show is that we tend to think of the self as running the show, the self, the word which philosophers use or which we use in everyday communication to describe our actions and our will to do and our choices in life. But the reality, the scientific reality of this self is that our conscious choices are just the tip of the iceberg, and there's a lot more going on under the surface. When a majority of the cells in a human body don't have, in fact, human DNA, they are agents foreign to our bodies, but they exert influence on our life choices, ranging from trivial things like the kind of food that we crave, but all the way up to if somebody has a certain kind of mental, the word deviation comes to mind, but that's not a correct word. But for example, obsessive disorder has been proven to be linked with influence of viruses. Certain types of schizophrenia has been proven to be linked to the effect that certain viruses have on neuronal structures in our brains. So we are convinced that we run our show, but the truth is that the human body is more like a battlefield or a vast empire with trillions of inhabitants which are fighting with each other for dominance, for control of the whole system. They are forming alliances, they are forging intrigues, and they enter into pacts. They are one faction is trying to overthrow the other, another faction is trying to bribe a fourth one, and what we usually ascribe as our consciousness or our freedom of will and choice is in fact the emergent outcome of this daily, hourly, political fighting inside our body.
Trust me. I'm an artist.
In Molding the Signifier, you chose to visualize the artificial intelligence, which is a computer program, as a human face. To me, it seems that in order for the viewer to relate, a human face is important,
I could have chosen a black monolith or a red eye to represent an artificial intelligence, but since I intended very intensively to work with the Uncanny Valley, and the Uncanny Valley phenomenon is directly tied to empathy. Uncanny Valley happens when the psychological process of empathy is somehow disrupted or skewed. So yes, that's exactly why I have chosen a human face, because that's where most of the Uncanny Valley happens. There are two things which are the most sensitive to the problem of Uncanny Valley, and one is facial expressions and the other is language, how people speak, how people talk. So and both are used in molding, speech and facial mimics.
Immutability and mutability of the sign. The signifier, though to all appearances freely chosen with respect to the idea that it represents, is fixed, not free, with respect to the linguistic community that uses it. The masses have no voice in the matter, and the signifier chosen by a language could be replaced by no other. This fact, which seems to embody a contradiction, might be called colloquially the stack deck.
When you chose Ferdinand de Saussure and this specific text.
We are proud of our ability to use language, and we are proud of having developed language in the first place. And in many discourses about what sets us apart from other animals on this planet, or what sets us apart from the rest of the universe, is that many times the only thing left after other arguments have been brushed off from the table is language. So that was a major motivation behind my using language. The second was what I told before, that or speech is one of the two most prominent areas where Uncanny Valley happens. And why Saussure? First of all, his work is seminal on our understanding of language. And the second is a kind of an in-joke, because I see Saussure as kind of a grandfather in thought of all the new media and cybernetics philosophy, because without Saussure there would be no structuralists, and without structuralists we wouldn't have post-structuralists, without whom we wouldn't have Baudrillard and Virilio and Donna Haraway. So without Saussure, it can be argued, the whole new media and cyberculture wouldn't look like it does today. So I am in a kind of secret in-joke deconstructing that in this work. Nobody asked me.
Des pastilles. À sucer pour l'oreille. Candy.